I'm about to feed him to the sharks right now.
Get him hype right now.
Yeah. You know the ground is up.
Yeah.
Everybody that trains, you know the game.
Yeah.
So let's get it. Slap it up, bump it and roll.
Hey.
Yeah, that's the way that it go. Ain't no better way to better yourself in this game. You're feeling the growth.
That's
time on the mat, we put in the work. Believe it ain't easy, I know. But we train for the love of the game, the love of the art. Now slap it up, bump it, let's roll.
Let's roll.
Welcome to episode 9 of the BJJ Campaign Podcast. My name is Jeff Boone. I'm an A3, blue belt, one stripe.
This is Phil Kors, A2, white belt, four stripes.
And Philly, I want to clarify something from last week. It's kind of funny. Our professor, John Plyler, we were getting ready to roll. I think it was Monday, possibly. Yeah, I think it was Monday. Yeah, it was Monday.
Okay.
And right before he said, podcast was really good, starting out with a compliment, right? It's a compliment sandwich is what it is. But you really don't want to tell people to cover up ringworm with bandages. And folks out there, just for your own information, this comes from years ago in my wrestling days. If someone had ringworm, we would just tape it up and cover it and make sure, and that was satisfactory. That is not satisfactory, a satisfactory thing to do on the jiu-jitsu mat. So
I've been telling Jeff it's not the 60s anymore, but, you know, it just doesn't always stick.
So just wanted to make that first correction on this, our Thanksgiving episode.
That's right.
Of the BJJ Campaign Podcast.
Black Friday special. Tell them about it.
Do we have a Black Friday?
It's a podcast. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a podcast. That's right. Black Friday, noon Friday. You'll be able to download it.
Half off.
Also, it is half off. Half off free. I guess technically that is right. Mathematically it works.
Yeah.
Mathematic. That's a Doug Schluter reference right there. He loves it when we do math. So we're going to talk about a few things this podcast and we've kind of touched on it before, but want to delve a little deeper into it, and that is, how do you choose your academy? Phil, how did you choose your academy?
Man, I'm going to say this a lot, but people should not do things the way I do. I feel like if you haven't chosen one yet and you're listening to a podcast about it, you know, doing some research, it's a great start. I prefer the old, you know, first result on Google and see what happens approach, and it worked out really good for me. But yeah, you might want to do some more research and try a couple places. See what you're into before, self-defense or sport, competition style. Different gyms kind of have different focuses. But yeah, I was like, oh, this place is 10 minutes away. Let's try that out. One class, sign me up. So, you know, that's kind of how my approach went. How did you go about finding one?
So I want to comment on that, because two things that you did were actually not bad and things that I would recommend. Obviously, Google, you know, everything. See the reviews. Look at the reviews if you can. Did you look at the reviews?
No. I Googled the first place and then took one class and signed up.
Good move. Second thing that you said was that what I feel is probably the correct way to go is there are a lot of really good jiu-jitsu academies out there, and the one that enables you to train the most is probably the one that you should go to, even if there are a couple that you've went to, checked out, and said, hey, those are really good. But I would always recommend...
Oh, like class schedule-wise?
Yeah.
Yeah,
class schedule.
Really good idea.
And for sure, location, man. Because if it's closer, you're more likely to train. And so, you know, a couple of additional things to that, what Phil did. You know, I looked up on Google and saw the reviews. Also, looked at the lineage of John Plyler. And, you know, because it's real easy now to see if you've got a legitimate black belt as your instructor, and sure enough, yeah, he Hoist Gracie lineage. That's where I want to go. And so, you know, doing that. Recommendations from friends. You know, I've recommended several different academies to friends based upon other friends that have trained there, and that seems to work out. Now, full disclaimer on that, recommendations from friends. Trust that friend. If they don't have a good attitude about things, then maybe it's not the best fit to go to their academy. However, that's very few and far between. So I would say definitely those before you walk in the door, looking it up on Google, getting recommendations from friends. And then once you walk in the door, you know, you don't have to say, I live right around the corner, right? And I'm thinking about training. You can actually say, hey, I'm just in from out of town and I've been thinking about training and I wanted to come, I had some free time, I wanted to come and check it out. It's not so much a lie. And the only reason I say that you may want to do that is because you don't want to get the sales pitch. And not that there is a sales pitch a lot of times, mm-hmm. but you want to get the true essence of what the class is, right? You don't want it to be seen as, hey, this is a possible customer. You'd rather see what that gym is all about for everyone.
Yeah.
You know, maybe even go, you know, observe a class, observe a sparring and how they interact, observe just the overall demeanor of all those involved. If it's a positive all around attitude, which, you know, I haven't been to a lot of different academies and I've never been to one with a bad attitude. So, you know, that's kind of what I would say. And before you go in, make sure you call and, you know, if you can talk to the professor, fine. If not, leave a message and say, hey, I plan on coming in Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, whenever it is. I'm just checking the place out. I'm in from out of town, you know, that sort of thing.
All good ideas.
Did
you try any other places or did you just go to Fighterman?
No. From recommendations and from talking to John on the phone, mm-hmm. I absolutely knew that's where I wanted to be. And it was certainly the closest to my house as well.
Mm-hmm.
So anything else whenever you're looking at new schools, what do you think, Phil?
Man, no, I think those are pretty much the big things, but it is kind of funny because thinking about it now that we're talking about it, like I used to sell a lot of stuff at my last job and like I would always be like, how do people just start, like how do you buy something that costs that much money? And then as soon as you buy it, you come to me and ask me all these questions because you're trying to do the research. And that's literally what I did, right? Like I went in, I just signed up, you know, for the year. Because I had fun, you know.
But, so you were your own frustration.
Yeah. So then I start, and then I'm researching, and then I find out, oh, there's schools that do no-gi, you know, exclusively. Like, I had no idea. And then, like, they don't focus on self-defense, like, at all. Oh, okay, that's good to know. Like, all just different things that I just had no idea. Lineage stuff, I would have had no idea. Like, I did all the research after I already started, you know. Same thing good I was move. Always complaining about. Yeah, so, funny. Yeah, here we are.
Yeah, and so another little point behind that was that you don't always know what your goals are true. Whenever you start training. So, you know, maybe instead of looking at what you're trying to focus on, because for me, I wasn't interested in the self-defense aspect of mm-hmm. jiu-jitsu at all.
Right.
You know, I was just doing it because that's what we were supposed to be doing. Now it's one of my favorite parts. I really enjoy it. So those things that you think that you want out of it, they may change once you begin your campaign.
Right.
Right? I mean, so I wouldn't necessarily base my decision upon whether it's that. I would base it on that it's a well-rounded school that does everything.
And another good point you had where if you have like four or five choices, I guess, where you live, if you live like in New York City or something where there's a ton of good options is the class schedule thing that I didn't really consider, right? Like what classes do they run when and how does it fit with your schedule? Obviously would be something to look at.
Yeah.
If you have all those choices, that's not something I really considered. I just kind of, what time are you? Do your classes? All right, I'll be here. So, that's kinda
yeah, no, that's it's a really good point. Just anything that makes it easier for you to train
Yeah.
You know, that's what you're looking for. So next we got the holiday coming up. Thanksgiving's coming up. Actually, Thanksgiving, when this will be published, is...
It's already going to be done with.
Going to be done.
Yeah.
Darn. Well, that's okay. But if you're going out of town for, whether it's a holiday or a vacation, right? We've kind of talked about it before. If you're out of town, you know, seek out places to train whenever you're out of town, especially if it's somewhere for the holidays when you're going back to see your family,
mm-hmm.
right? You're going to have the same places that every time you go back to see your family, you can form those relationships and say, hey, you know, I come in every 3 or 4 months, would love to train with you guys and get that. So, if you don't have plans to train, maybe you're injured. You know, take that time to any of your nagging injuries, right, Phil? You have some nagging injuries?
Yeah, they kind of always are around. The back injury, and Jeff pulls my neck out of my back sometimes where he tries to dislocate it. You know, take the time. I guess if you're trying to recover, it would be a good time to do it. I'm probably not going to do that. I'm going to try to continue to train on a couple open mats and take advantage of that time because I'm addicted. But, you know, not a bad idea to rest and make the injuries go away.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. But as I said, if you're going in for the holidays, finding that place and having some place that you can go back to every time you're back in town, you know, again, to rehash what we did on a previous podcast, and that was, if you're going someplace, call them, let them know that you're coming in.
Yeah.
Look up their website, see what it is. See if they have their rules posted on their website, because, you know, maybe it's someplace that only allows white geese, like our academy, right? You want to make sure to respect that whenever you walk in the door. If you walk in the door with a camouflage gi or black gi and they're all white geese, that's probably not the best.
Camouflage don't even see you, but, you know, the black one will stand out.
Good point, Phil. Yeah. Good point.
but yeah, no, if you're going back, I mean, there's people that train with us that go to college and come back every couple months, holidays and things like that. They come back and it's always cool to see them. So, I mean, you're going to, you bond with people pretty quick when you're rolling with them. So it's not going to take too long. If you go twice, you should be pretty much kind of sort of a part of that group when you show up.
Yeah, if you share sweat, if they sweat in your face.
Doesn't take long to get to know somebody.
Sweat in your mouth.
Yeah. Lee posted that waterfall the other day. That was funny.
That was good. But yeah, the point of the matter is, you know, for Thanksgiving too, you know, you're going to be eating a ton.
Yeah.
You know, you want to make sure to work out, you know, to keep yourself in shape, or if you have an upcoming tournament, to stay on weight. You know, those sort of things. So just make sure that if you have an extended holiday or vacation, that you're getting that training. It, you know, it can be an excuse to miss, but it can also be an excuse to broaden your horizons where you meet fellow like-minded jiu-jitsu practitioners and, you know, maybe even form lifelong bonds or friendships that they come and train with you at some point whenever they're traveling on the road. So, and everybody gets better that way.
Yeah. But like you said, though, you had the good point about if you're injured, maybe it would be a good idea to take, you know, a 4 or 5 day break and rest up.
Well, your point was better in that we're ignoring those injuries and forging ahead and training anyway.
You know, teach their own.
So, Phil, we were talking a little bit before the podcast, and we were talking about, you know, whenever you're getting into new positions, new concepts, and trying to be better at a position, right? Because what we all say is roll with a purpose. If you've got a weakness in your game, try to strengthen that weakness.
Sure, yeah.
And so whenever we do that, we want to positionally work with those within those parameters, meaning that that in particular, you know, you wanted your half guard game to come up, right?
Yeah, it kind of all started from when you pointed out that I'd never try to leave the guard even when the opportunities are there for a better position. So the guard for me is kind of like my home base, comfortable, safe. You know, that's where I feel safest is that, because I know if I get in the mount, I'm probably going to get rolled or, you know, whatever. So I would intentionally not take that position, even though it's better and I should practice it, right? So you pointed that out. So that kind of started the snowball of everything else. It was a few weeks ago, a month ago, probably, maybe more, I don't know. But that started the snowball of, you know, there's taking the back is available in this position, sweeps are available in this position, you know, you're going to be in half guard a lot, and I have no plan in half guard. So to start working on that, you know, we would work on the positional half guard stuff a lot to try to build, kind of, you know, get comfortable in the position to the point where I have a plan of at least A or B, right? Where I'm not, you know, for a long time I had just plan A of just trying to pass this one way. Now I kind of have a plan B of trying to flatten out and go the other way if that's what's available. Now I feel like I got to transition from plan B into C, you know, and kind of building off all of that. So just that process of just getting away from where you feel safest and trying to, because you think you're making a lot of progress when you're in your safe, you know, home, comfortable spot, and you're like, oh yeah, I'm getting way better. You know, it just so happens that he passed my guard this one time. Well, maybe next time I'm going to pass it. Well, no. You know, if you're able to get the better position and go from there, that's when you're getting better, because you're expanding all areas versus just kind of focusing on just one, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, for sure. And, you know, to have that well-rounded game, obviously, yeah. You know, if you can sweep from the guard, sure, sweep from the guard. But, you know, especially if you want to work that half guard, you can really force that position in rolling, you know, with just about anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, getting in that half guard, making sure that you're exploring all the options in the half guard. And like you said, having plan A, plan B, you know, sometimes a plan C, depending on where you're at in your campaign, you might have that. But I think it's important just to get time in that position.
Well, it's really, I 100% agree. It's really what it is, because, you know, you drill all those different techniques in the class, but, and I've said this before, like, I think the best feeling is when you kind of put two of them together, you know, kind of out of nowhere, and you're not even thinking about it. Because, like, I'm trying to force that plan A constantly. And then that plan B was shown to me by somebody else, you know, later down the road. And I'm like, okay, I can kind of see how this works, right? And then later on, you're kind of working A and B together, you know, because they're, you know, obviously going to react to plan A. So that kind of leads me into plan B, you know. And then all of a sudden, 2 weeks after that, you see this transition appear that's been there the whole time, but you never knew to take it, right? And then you kind of transition into the next position. And then you're like, oh, wow, you know, it's progressing, right? That's what you're hoping for, and that's how you build off of that.
Yeah, absolutely. You're building your game one block at a time, right? And just Phil, to give the audience a little bit of the plan A, plan B, specifically talk about what you were talking about from half guard.
Yeah, so the first kind of pass from the half guard I learned was when they're doing the knee shield, is grabbing the collar with your, I guess you'd say, bottom hand and weaving your arm in between their legs, trying to kind of crush their legs down and sprawl your hips out and pass around that way. Most people don't let me do that, so I've gotten into kind of that smashing pass to where you cross face behind the head, underhook the outside arm, get your bottom knee towards their hip, and then walk your other foot up to either get your foot out or take them out. So that was kind of my A and B of my two options, depending on, you know, if I can pass around one way or if they react and I can flatten them out. The other pass seems to be more effective for me. And you can take them out, obviously. The transition C is, after doing that for like a month, of trying to figure out those passes together. I mean, just in the last week, I've noticed that when I'm fighting for the underhook, I can trap it kind of with my head and transition into the plan C of, you know, passing them out and taking like the head and arm or arm triangle.
Yeah, absolutely. A really good, effective way of building your game. You know, and I've kind of been working the same thing with having someone that's got me in side control. And so trying to have those options for the rollover or the guard recovery instead of just going to straight guard recovery. Because, you know, with that rollover position, you can either get to guard recovery or get in a more dominant, go back to side control on your opponent by rolling them over and escaping and getting in their side control. Yeah. So that's something that I've been working on here lately. And side control is a tough position, man.
Yeah, it's really bad. I mean, that there's the mount is the more, you know, better position because, yeah, you know, they can't hit you in theory, but side control, strictly in the grappling sense, especially for new people, you know, you have a way better base, way easier to hold that. I'd prefer people wearing the mount because I'm more confident I'm going to get out. So I try to work side control as much as I can. I mean, every time I roll with somebody, if it's like a 5-minute round and I have like, you know, one or two progressions that go the way I want them to, then I immediately try to get them to go top side control because that's where I feel absolutely the weakest. You know, like I've been telling you a lot, like the other thing I'm trying to work on now is attacking the back. Like I'll get to, like, I know the stuff, but I you know, like I know the rear naked choke, I know the idea of the bow and arrow, I know there's arm bars there and stuff, but when I get to that position now, I don't have success finishing anything, which is to be expected because I never practiced it. But, you know, now that I'm trying to do it, totally lost where I was going with that whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's okay. We can move on from there.
Yeah, I totally just distracted my own self. Where did I start?
The side control. They get you in side control?
Yeah. So being on the back is not a successful thing, but that's not a huge concern at the moment because worst case out of that is they just turn in and I have them in the guard or I take them out or whatever versus when I'm on bottom side control, worst case scenario is obviously a lot worse.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
So that's what I try to force working those escapes out of.
Yeah, and something else that I wanted to talk about, and this is, I watched a video, I think it was on YouTube, of For Us as a Hobby. I don't know if all the audience knows For Us as a Hobby, but if you know MMA, For Us as a Hobby coaches George St. Pierre and other world champions. He's their jiu-jitsu instructor, and I thought he had a really interesting point, and one I don't know that I agree or disagree with, but I thought it was an interesting point. Mm-hmm. And that point was that whenever you're a white belt, you should be doing 80% drilling and 20% sparring, right? Mm-hmm. And then it kind of flips whenever you're a black belt and it's 20% sparring and 20% drilling, sorry, and 80% sparring. And then obviously through the ranks, whenever you're coming up, you know, blue belt, maybe that's 30 to 40% drilling and 30 to 40% sparring and 60% drilling, you know, and so on through the progression of that. And the point that he made was the drilling is for that muscle memory. Mm-hmm. And the actual mobility of the moves, the mobility it takes to do the different movements in jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
And so when you're a black belt, you already have that mobility. You've already done that work. And the reason I thought about it was because I feel like I don't do as much drilling as I should.
Okay.
You know? And So to get that mobility and that muscle memory. But then you made the point of positional drilling is drilling. I was thinking of drilling more just in the sense of, okay, we're going to do 100 arm bars, or we're going to do 100 hip escapes to get out of side control, which is a great idea to drill those types of things.
Yeah. I do kind of consider positional sparring to be more drilling, especially for me being like new, right? Because going back to, and don't let me forget that mobility thing, John was saying last night with the arm bar, that drill is something that works on your hips the whole time. So don't let me forget that. But the positional sparring, going back to half guard, right? I only knew A. I only knew the weave pass. I was trying to do that every single time. That's just, in my opinion, that's drilling with resistance. You know, I would drill the move in class with no resistance to try to get it as perfect as possible. And then I would drill it in the positional sparring because that's the only thing I know to do. I was just drilling that for my turn on top. And then, you know, we switch and I try to defend it with the knee shield, say, is the only thing I know at the moment on the bottom. Flip, I try again, you know, and I just keep working that same one. Every time I do something and you or someone reacts, that feedback, in my opinion, is part of the drilling. There's no other way to get through it, because you need the resistance to figure out the fail points, you know, like they say. And just last night, I was trying to do the bow and arrow. I was missing a detail. I just don't know which one, you know. And it's in live rolling, but it's the same idea. And then after class, I asked, I said, can I see a bow and arrow? Because, you know, I'm right there. I think it's good. You know, I'm doing the major things in my head, but there's clearly a detail I'm missing, because when I get bow and arrowed, it feels like my head's going to pop off. Like, there's no hanging out there, so I'm obviously missing something. But I do consider the positional stuff drilling, and that's probably why I like it so much. And, you know, because it's the instant feedback where I think I know it. Because it is hard to just drill, you know, with no resistance forever, because
it's boring.
It's boring, right? Like, it is, you know? Like, it's cool when you're learning it and you're slowly trying to get through it, but once you're like, if I can do it to the point where there's no corrections, or I don't understand why the corrections are being made, it's not as good. It's more fun, and the feedback is better to me when I'm trying to do it and you're blocking me. Probably this is why I'm such a dumb, slow learner, but like, I seem to have more fun and learn it when I try to do what I think I know what I'm doing, and it's getting stuffed repeatedly. And then they're like, yeah, it's because you're not doing the thing I told you to do. And I'm like, oh, yeah, good point. You know, oh, it does work. That's why you told me to do it. You know, like, that's what's fun to me.
Really, actually, somebody else told you to do it, because you never give me credit for...
You have terrible ideas.
Yeah. You're right. Good point.
But I do totally consider that, in my opinion, drilling. But I could see his point, too, where once you do know all the moves and you have drilled them and you have your sequences you're trying to do, you know, the timing is the most important thing, right? Mm-hmm. Like, how many times do you can do the technique on somebody, and then as soon as somebody resists, you're just too late or too early, or you telegraph, you know, it's all that stuff that that's what ruins the move, not the technique, where, you know, sparring a lot gets the timings down and the setups and all that stuff.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you, but I'm really intrigued, and I really feel like that mobility aspect, because you look, we were drilling arm bars last night, right? You got a really good arm bar. You know, you move very well with your hip mobility. You know, I get my bottom foot in the armpit, and that transition is just not smooth for me, which makes me feel like, specifically arm bars, I need to be going in before class and working on our grappling dummy Blake,
right
there, and just doing arm bar after arm bar to get the position down, to get it to where I'm not stiff arming everything. I'm bending my arms, I'm sliding down the arm like that fireman's going down the pole. that sort of thing. That's what's kind of been in my head and made me think of this topic is that I feel like I have to have better mobility.
And on the same topic, this might help, that drill last night that they had the kids do, where in the warm-ups, they put their fists on the ground, yes, straight arms.
That was the first time.
And then they rotate back and forth. I've seen it a few times. So I walked over to Charlie, and I said, what is this? I was like, is this to build some sort of like a guard pass? Because it's sort of like the Toreando, you know, where you're kind of pinning and moving to the side. I was like, what is this for? And he's like, yeah, it's designed for like hip flexibility and getting used to moving the hips and stuff.
So be a little more descriptive on the actual movement. I think
you walk like a monkey.
Yeah, it was monkey walks is what it was.
Is that what it's called? Because that's what it looks like.
Yeah, I think that's what it was.
Yeah, it's just you make a fist and you're putting your knuckles on the floor and you're kind of bent over at the waist and then you support your weight in your fists and you kind of, you know, use your hips and swing to the side, reposition your hands and swing back the other way.
So swinging back like 45 to 90 degrees on one side. And then putting your hands back and swinging 45 to 90 degrees on the other side.
Yeah, you're doing 90 to 90. You're doing 90 at first, and then you're doing 180.
90 and then 180. Yeah, yeah, okay,
you're 90. Like, you're going like a half spin back and forth.
Yeah, that's right.
Just repositioning which hand is in front to swing back and forth.
Yeah, gotcha.
I don't know if this makes any sense to somebody who has never seen this before, but if you just kind of think of how a monkey walks.
Well, I saw it, and it doesn't make much sense to me.
Yeah.
So it's probably...
Yeah.
But... Really good drill. Maybe we'll get...
But it's for hip flexibility. But yeah, that's funny you bring that up, though, because I was just all the movements have a reason, I realize. But I'm just like, I don't know what this one is, other than maybe like a guard pass, you know. But yeah, for hip flexibility, that makes a lot of sense.
You're right about all the movements have a reason. And it always blows me... Or I guess, I don't know how long ago it was, but I finally put together... Oh, you know, like John or Ryan, they do the warm-up specific to what we're going to be doing that day.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, I was, and by the way, folks, I'm a dummy. I mean, that just all, you know, so it took me maybe a year and a half to figure that out.
Yeah, usually when they do the side break fall, you're getting thrown.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. For sure, yeah, that's a good indication. But yeah, I think that's super interesting and we did it on Sunday with Lee, too, whenever we were doing that muscle sweep.
That's why I couldn't figure out why you were saying stretch the neck out so much.
Yeah. You see, I'm starting to incorporate that in our Sunday rolls, right?
Yeah.
Specific warm-ups. It takes me a while, but I'll get there.
Yeah. You actually told me to stretch my neck out because you were going to try to rip it off my spine later.
That was totally unintentional.
Good thing I stretched. Good thing I stretched. I just put that together. So.
Totally unintentional. For the listeners out there, what's going on? After we did our Sunday rolls, Phil asked, you know, about the head and arm triangle whenever you're on top in the guard, right?
Yeah, it's just a weird transition because it was off of a side control escape that John showed about a week ago, I think. And I knew I was doing it wrong, and it was in a different position. I don't remember if it was like mount or half guard or just however I caught the arm. But I figured the guy on top was uncomfortable, so I kind of just kept hanging on to the point I was able to recover the guard. And I was just like, you know, is there a way I could finish this basically arm triangle from the guard instead of a regular triangle? And you can if Jeff pulls your head off. It hurts, and I tapped.
So. so where the mistake happened was I was kind of pulling on the legs, pulling on the head, and it was certainly a neck crank. Not the way you want to do it. I'm sorry, I was pushing my legs away and had the head and arm triangle. And instead, whenever you raise your shoulder up and pull them in, it's more effective at finishing that move. So, yeah.
Very true, yeah.
So, just want to talk about a couple of upcoming things. First of all, thanks to our sponsor, My BJJ Notes. Perfect. Totally honest with you. Since we've restarted the curriculum at one, I've had all of the notes in there,
mm-hmm.
and I've been reviewing them. And every single time, there's at least one thing that I've left out of them. So
like, you mean you've added
one that I've left out in the previous notes. Yeah, so I mean, that's just so valuable to be able to go back and correct. Well, not just correct, just add to some detail. And I guess it's the detail that you're kind of ready to listen to whenever you do add it. So that's another benefit of my BJJ notes.
Yeah.
Have you done that since we restarted the curriculum?
I haven't. No, I've never gone back, reviewed, and added to old notes. That I'll do that on specific things, especially if it's something I'm working on.
Mm-hmm.
But no, not in the way you're doing it. It's probably a good idea.
Yeah. So thanks to Mike and the crew there. We've got the upcoming Toro Cup that we're going to, helping sponsor.
Mm-hmm.
Super excited about that. What else are we excited about, Phil?
T-shirts.
Yeah.
Some cool T-shirts coming.
That's right. We got the BJJ campaign T-shirts with the logo. Shout out to Boomer at Toro. And they're getting us T-shirts so that we'll have them before we go to the Toro Cup. And we'll be posting lookout on the website, which is bjjcampaignpodcast.com. Phil's going to be putting up a link for pre-orders and to be able to order those shirts. I think we're going to probably sell them for around $25 a shirt.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty reasonable. And also, go to the YouTube channel.
Yeah. That's BJJ Campaign Podcast on YouTube.
What do we have on that YouTube channel, Phil? A
couple podcast episodes.
Not all the podcast episodes.
Yeah, some of them. Some of the good ones.
Sometimes our video doesn't always work that well.
Yeah, nothing you can do about that. And then a bunch of the instructional stuff from the Origin Camp.
Yeah, and kind of talk about how you categorize those for our listeners.
In the order of the seminar. So down the progression that they went, I put them in. So every break, you know, it picks right back up where he left off.
Yeah.
And Jeff usually adds his opinion as to how they could improve from there.
That has never happened, folks. That has never happened.
But no, there's so much good stuff there. I mean, we were talking about this the other day, like every time they go back over the fundamentals class and they do point out like a detail that I've picked up since the last time they went, you know, and I'll be like, oh, he does say that every time. Interesting, you know, but you miss it all the time. So it's like, if you could just remember all the jiu-jitsu you've already learned, you'd probably be very good, but you just forget everything.
Well, yeah. I mean, if I remember all the jiu-jitsu I've learned, I've gone through the curriculum like five times. So
yeah.
And I'm still not that good. So. Yeah. Or don't remember that kind of stuff. So yeah. And also follow us on Facebook, like us on Facebook,
mm-hmm.
Subscribe to the podcast. That's a great way to support. You know, people are asking, how do we support you guys? You know, you guys are kind enough to send us in suggestions for the show. We really appreciate that. Keep it going. Maybe we'll have some polls up on our Facebook page to say, hey, what do you want to see in future content? On
yeah, any topics. Campaign? Any topics that you think of.
Yeah, cool. I mean, go.
Questions, whatever.
Can they post on the website, or they can just comment?
There's comments on like every section they can put. They can just email or just message or write on any Facebook post. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's good. And, you know, give us a review. If you like the show, give us a review. If you don't like the show, give us a review. Doesn't matter. You know what I mean? We want to get better at doing this, you know?
Yeah, especially like when I lose my train of thought halfway through my sentence. Yeah. I know that's not great. So you can just let me know.
Happens.
Yeah.
Happens.
I got excited about the other stuff I was talking about, like attacking the back, and I was like, I totally forgot what I was talking about 30 seconds ago. But you know, it happens.
It does happen. And who was it? Somebody said we got our first stripe at podcasting.
I don't know. That was generous.
That was super generous. Super generous. We're still waiting on that first stripe, I think.
One day.
We'll get there someday. But anyway, guys, we appreciate all the support. We look forward to providing more content, more guests to help out with your campaign. So get out there and train. Have fun. And do something good. Be better.
Happy Thanksgiving. Or I hope you had a good Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Don't eat too much.
I'm about to feed them to the sharks right now.
Get them hype right now.
Yeah. You know the ground is up.
Yeah.
Everybody that trains, you know the game.
Yeah.
So let's get it. Slap it up, bump it, and roll.
Hey.
Yeah, that's the way that it goes. Ain't no better way to better yourself in this game. You're feeling the growth.
That's
time on the mat. We put in the work. Believe it ain't easy, I know.
No.
But we train for the love of the game, the love of the art. Now slap it up, bump it, let's run. Yeah.
Get up.
BMA. We better take him on a voyage.
Get up.
That was your back.